Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. It snowed on Monday, early Monday morning. Got about 12 and a half inches there in Lake Wobegon. Was no big fuss about it. People saw it come down. It's November. It's Minnesota. And we had a beautiful, beautiful fall. And so this was no big problem. Some people came home around noon to shovel. People waited until evening and got out their snow blowers. And it just wasn't bad at all. No school was canceled because they're saving that, you know, for January, February, the polar vortex and whatever we have waiting for us out there. Last year, they canceled school six times for cold weather, which they never did back in the day, which made some old people grumble, of course, but it's okay. Things change. We move along. 100 years ago, they used to whip children in the schools for behavior that we now have initials for, ADD, ADHD, and OCD. So some progress is being made. Margie Krebsbach came in to teach English on Monday. She brought her lamp with her that she's bought now to help her out with SAD, the seasonal affective disorder. And it really seems to work. It's just a globe. It's a big globe, but it just cheers her up. It does. And she set it on her desk, and it seemed to cheer up the students as well. They were livelier than they usually are. They're in the midst of reading The Great Gatsby and kind of struggling with the middle parts of that book. She said, well, let's not talk about the book today. Let's just talk about ourselves. She said the most famous line in The Great Gatsby is the one at the end. You haven't come to that yet. And so our boats beat on against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past. Very poetic, but not true. And but, you know, he was alcoholic, so he he was sort of grief-stricken. Now, the interesting sentence, she said, is the one in the chapter that we're reading now. It's where Nick Carraway remembers the advice that his father gave him. When you're tempted to criticize someone, remember that all the people in the world did not have the advantages that you have. Well, that's worth thinking about, she said. So, she said, what advantages do we have growing up in this little town of Lake Wobegon? Well, there was a long, thoughtful silence, and then the usual suspects, you know, came up with the usual answers, and, you know, learning about hard work and good education, good teachers, and, you know, churches and faith and so forth. But it was a kid in the very back of the class who spoke up. Rick said, well, people all turned around and said, yeah, that's it. He said, we grew up from the time we were little with a feeling that we belong here. We belong to something. We're not just floating around like molecules in the air. We belong. This is our place. These are our people. It was a lovely thought. So much that light can do, you know, for intelligence. It hasn't done that for the deer. The male deer have been battling each other, and some have even come to town battling each other with their enormous rack of horns for the most desirable female. There were two males who were fighting in the alley on Monday out behind Clint and Irene Bunsen's house, two big males, and she was watching them. She took some pictures of them in the alley. They were banging at each other and kicking at each other, and then they were stood there motionless, and she realized their antlers were locked. So she called up Clint down at the garage, and he headed home, and Wally then came up the driveway. He honked at them, and the deer did not move, and Clint arrived, and he looked at both of them. Their heads were way down low. They were trying to come in under each other, and they were locked together. Wally said, what do? We shoot them? No. Clint said, just get me a shovel. He got a shovel, and he lifted it way up high, and he brought it down, boom, whang, on the interlocked antlers, and they fell apart. The two deer just fell apart. And now there were three males looking at each other. And one was looking at Clint, and Clint looked over behind him at his fence. It was too high for him to go over. He was trapped by this deer. And when he looked over his shoulder, the deer came at him. And Clint grabbed hold of the deer's antlers, and he kind of stood him off. The deer was strong, but Clint had his back to the fence. He said to the deer, he said, "You can have her. I don't want her. She's too fat for me." He made some low grunting sounds. Meanwhile, Irene had called the constables, Gary and Leroy, and they came, and Leroy pulled out his pistol, and Clint said, "Don't shoot. Whatever you're going to do, don't shoot. Kick him. Kick him between the legs. Kick him where it counts." And Leroy did. The deer went down on all four knees, and he bounded up, and he tore away. He tore away. That was a close call. Clint went back in the house. Irene was okay. He went back to work. He'd been working on Mr. Peterson's pickup truck. He was working on the battery, and Mr. Peterson came in, and he said, "I thought you said it would be ready in 20 minutes. You just started on it." Clint said, "Well, my old lady called me up, and she said that she needed me to come home, and so I went home, and boy, I walked in the house. She was all over me. I mean, she took my glasses off. She unbuttoned my shirt. She took my belt off. She was just wearing a bathrobe, and there were still dishes on the breakfast table, and she just threw me down on my back, and she just, boy, I tell you, women, what gets into them at this time of year? I have no idea." Okay, Mr. Peterson said, don't tell me everything. He went down to the Chatterbox Cafe to have him a cup of coffee, and Dorothy had just made some pumpkin bread pudding, and she said, "How about some Kenny? You want some bread pudding?" Kenny said, "Well, I mean, I just ate, but sure, I'll have a little bit." So she put a big dollop in a bowl, and she served it to him. She watched him as he ate it, sitting there with his Peterbilt cap on. You could tell he was a truck driver just to look at him. He grew up on a farm near Lake Wobegon, Kenny Peterson. His dad was Walter. Walter's dad, Kenny's grandpa, was Oscar, and they have been here forever since the turn of the century before this last turn. They were neighbors of the Hansons. The Petersons were neighbors of the Hansons. Harold Hanson, that was Dorothy's grandfather. Dorothy is a Hanson. Those two families lived next door to each other, and Harold and Oscar were best friends. They helped each other combining and cutting hay, and they'd go to the saloon together, and they hung out together. And then one fall day, Oscar came home early from town. He'd gone on errands, and he came back, and he walked into the house, and there was Mrs. Peterson, his wife, in the arms of Harold Hanson, and they were kissing in a serious way. There was some shouting, and there was weeping, and some pushing and shoving, and then they sort of calmed down, you know, so as not to upset the children. There were children screaming in the upstairs bedroom. Harold went home, and he thought it was all over. But the next day, Oscar found his wife packing her suitcase, and he got out his shotgun, and he walked over to the Hanson house, and there was Mr. Hanson, who was throwing hay down for the cows. And he said something to Oscar, and Oscar aimed at him, and he shot him. And then he shot himself. Two bodies lay in the barn. There were two funerals in the Lutheran church the next Saturday, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. The sermons were very short. A lot of people went to the Peterson funeral, not many people went to the Hanson funeral, for some reason. There they are. Dorothy pouring coffee for Kenny Peterson. Both their grandfathers, best friends. One killed the other, then killed himself. Seven children left fatherless. Most of the Petersons left town after that, except for Walter. Walter would never talk about it. He said, that's history. That was a long time ago. I was just a kid. I don't remember. Kenny doesn't talk about it either. Dorothy's very interested in this story. 1934 it happened. Long time ago, 80 years ago. But she just got a diary that her niece gave her that belonged to Harold's oldest daughter, Sina. And Sina wrote in the diary that she had seen her dad and Mrs. Peterson up in the haymow, not three times, but four, maybe five times. They'd been carrying on for a long time. And when Harold was shot and killed, he had $1,000 in his shirt pocket, which was a lot of money back in 1934. And he had two bus tickets to Winnipeg. They were planning to run away together. What sort of life did they imagine they would have in Canada? What were they going to do? What drove him to this crossing of the boundary? She wants to ask Kenny about it, but she doesn't dare. He never talks at all. A very quiet man. He sat there eating his bread pudding. She couldn't stand it anymore. She went down to talk to Pastor Liz, who'd never heard the story of the murder and the suicide. She went down and talked to Pastor Liz, and she told her the whole story. And as Dorothy told her the story of the two men, she realized this was a long time ago. Everybody's dead who was around then. Nobody remembers this. There's more I want to know, but there's nobody left to ask. She said to Pastor Liz, this is just water under the bridge, isn't it? It's all gone, and yet it's not gone. I can't get it out of my mind. It's still with us. Pastor Liz had to go off to women's Bible study. She said, I'll pray for you, whatever good that may do. She went off to Bible study, and she led them in prayer, and she read the gospel for the study. It was the parable of the wedding where some people fell asleep, the message to stay awake and keep your lamp trimmed and burning. And then the discussion, which as usual veered way, way off the track, and they were talking about Christmas coming up and why does it have to come so soon? People are starting to put up decorations. It isn't even Thanksgiving yet. Pastor Liz just sat, listened to it. She doesn't want to lead this Bible study. Let them go. Let them talk about whatever they want to. But she looked down beside her, and there, Mrs. Lindbergh had her iPad, and she was texting somebody. She said, this morning, Clint Bunsen came home and killed a deer with his bare hands in his backyard. And then he went in the house, and he had rough sex with his wife. It's the truth. Men, be careful. They're crazy. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.